When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, I'm Matt Lee.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself the Wire. The Wire podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Wire
and talk about it.
Want to thank everyone out there listening to the world's only The Wire podcast, The Wire, a show about how neither Jeffrey Epstein nor D'Angelo Barksdale killed themselves. Yeah. Did you know? Give us 5 stars in review on all the, podcast apps. And, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you want to see what Vince looks like. He does not look as Italian as he sounds. You actually don't sound
true.
Italian.
I sound very Italian.
Yeah. I mean,
Hey, I'm podcasting.
You know, that's what you're always saying. And you're always talking
my
about.
My famous catchphrase.
Yeah. Sorel, you say that a lot. So yeah, do that. And then also, if you are on Reddit, r/PodYourselfTheWire. It's pretty great. Okay, today we're going to be talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 8, Moral Midgetry. And our guest today, oh, ladies and gentlemen, we got a great guest. He, you know him from the wonderful podcast Behind the Bastards. It is time to introduce, for the first time on this podcast, Mr. Robert Evan.
What?
What up?
I'm doing good. Since Vince is also Italian, I wanted to know how you feel about this, Vince, because I've been trying to recuperate the word Dago, which is an old-timey racist slur against Italians.
Yes.
Because as a man in comedy, I feel the need to be able to say a bad word that I other people
100%.
Shouldn't say.
Yes.
I think I'm bringing it back.
No, it's time to reclaim Dago's, my Dago. Yeah.
My Dago.
Yeah. I say WAP a lot.
Yeah, WAP's like, a good one.
WAP's fun.
It sounds more offensive because it's
hard P.
It's percussive. Whereas Dago, it's kind of like sing-songy, which is
it's too close to Deo, as in daylight come and me want to go home.
Me want to go home.
Yeah. So it doesn't.
I have been considering when podcasting finally dries up as an industry, like putting together a stage show, going to the Gathering of the Juggalos every year, covered in like glow-in-the-dark face paint, and I can be like the Dayglow Dago. seems like a plan.
I love this new rebrand where you're like, hey, you know, you got to make jobs where you can make them. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah,
I think you would have to do a lot of explaining to the gathered juggalos what a Dago is.
Sit down and like read them a book about Ellis Island. Explain
the
conceptions of whiteness and how they shifted over the 1800s.
Gather round and let me regale you with tales of the ethnic white.
Oh, there was a day when they weren't white, and oh boy, did they rue the day.
See, it's
they
a shifting
came.
Scale.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the thing. You know, there's different shades of brown in Italy, so you never know how white one can be. Well, now it's all white to me.
It's kind of like the MDMA that you buy at the Gathering of the Juggalos. It varies in color from.
Yes, but at the end of the day, it's still a lot of fun, makes you dance, and sometimes is violent. Because Italians are violent.
Yeah.
I can say that. Some of my best friends are Italian violent people, like Vince. Robert, do you like The Wire?
I love The Wire.
Okay, sick. Good start.
Asked and answered.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Here's another interview question, because we do an interview with every guest up top with lots of hard-hitting questions. Who do you think the biggest bastard is on The Wire?
Biggest bastard on The Wire.
Yeah.
I always forget his name, but the guy that I'm consistently angriest at is like the old police chief dude.
Rawls.
Rawls. Yeah. Rawls. Yeah. He's the one who like pisses me off most consistently.
I
definitely seasons three and four when I watched it the first time really disliked Marlo, but I came around on Marlo by the end. I was sympathetic to him by the end of the show.
Yeah, no, I didn't like him either. There was like a part of me originally not liking him because he came in and he started hurting all my friends.
All my guys I like.
Yeah. And I was like, why is he so mean to my favorite guys? Mm-hmm. And then later on, I didn't like him because he felt kind of one-dimensional. Like, you know, there's a show where there's a lot of nuance. There's no real like bad guys. And I was like, why did they just decide to create like a bad guy, like a guy who's he's just bad. But upon rewatch, I've decided that I like Marlo a lot. Mm-hmm. I like that he is a perfect combination of Stringer Bell's business acumen. Yeah. And Avon Barksdale's I Just Want My Corners Man. You know what I mean? He's a nice hybrid of both of them. Also, he's hot and he has cat eyes.
He is hot. He does have cat eyes. I've come to identify with him more, you know. Once upon a time, I just did podcasts, and now like I run a network of podcasts.
Yeah.
And like Marlo, I find myself wanting to do the podcasting equivalent of just beating up two random drug dealers on the street in order to feel alive again.
Oh, if we could do that.
You and Sophie at a meeting at the end of the series, and you're just like wearing a suit. You're with iHeart executives, and you're like, I gotta get out of here. And
I just leave and kick the shit out of Will Arnett.
You gotta find one of the Pod Johns and just make him piss blood for a month.
Oh yeah, yeah. Heavy is the crown, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you wear that crown.
Heavy are these hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Will Ferrell cuts me just a little bit, and I remember what it was like to want to live.
Just in a holding cell screaming, my name is my name, but it's also Robert Evans, the producer's name. Our name is our name. But this is not a podcast about Robert Evans, the producer of such movies like The Godfather, I think. No.
He would fit in with a decent chunk of this cast.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yes. No, he would be like McNulty's best friend at the bar, who's just running plays to try and get pussy. Mm-hmm. Be pretty great. No, but this is a The Wire.
Do the one about how we're casting a film. Yeah. That's the only one he ever does.
That's his favorite. Yeah. And we cannot, of course, start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. Podcast. The Irish. Pod. Season 3.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today, once again, we're going to be talking about from season 3 of The Wire, episode 8, Moral Midgetry. And this episode came out November 14th, 2004. Vince, can you make up a synopsis off the top of your head?
Yeah. Stringer Bell is running into some trouble as he tries to become a real estate developer. That's Avon's running into some trouble as he runs into Marlo on the corners. And McNulty is running into some trouble when he tries to ingratiate himself with someone in the county by being racist, only to find out that that guy, he's big into interracial marriage.
Yes, which is officially makes you not racist. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful synopsis. And once again, I am very impressed with your ability to do that off the top of your head. But Vince, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right. I think what you're trying to say is we can't evaluate any art divorced from its cultural context. We got to put some of that cultural context back in. And we do that with something that we like to call the back in the day machine.
It's a bad time for newspapers. The news hole is shrinking as advertising dollars continue to decline.
There ain't no back in the day.
Machine tells the tale, son.
That's right. We're going all the way back. November 14th, 2004.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I was in college. It was my first year in college.
Leaves were changing and so was Matt.
I was changing mm-hmm. into a non-virgin.
Wow. I think it was my sophomore year in college. Yeah. I think this was the year I started playing World of Warcraft. So the next 3 years are kind of a blur, but yeah.
big news for everybody. Some of the things that were going on, big week of resignations. Colin Powell, he resigned along with three others in the cabinet. He resigned his place as Secretary of State, expected to be replaced by Condoleezza Rice.
Mm.
You know, he decided to help get us into that war, and as soon as it started to go bad, he was like, you know what, I'm out of here.
That's good, man. You know, he saved face, and now everyone loves Colin. Do people talk about Colin Powell anymore? I felt like he just kind of disappeared into the dustbin of history. Like, people are definitely still mad at him, but I haven't seen a revival yet.
There were some mean obituaries when he died.
He didn't die. Did he die?
Yeah, he's dead, I think. Pretty sure he's
Colin
dead.
Colin Powell died? I don't know.
He done been dead.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah, I know. I missed that. No, I already poured one out for him, for Ashcroft, you know? I actually have a closet full of 40s of Steel Reserve for each member of the Bush White House.
Just ready to go.
It's just ready. They're labeled. They got names on them.
And it's not to like pour it out in their honor. It's that you drink it, you chug it, mm-hmm. and then you go and piss on their grave.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, he did die. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm. dead.
Yeah, he's dead as hell.
2021.
As hell. Was he a COVID death? Is that what got him?
I think he was cancer, but could have been a complicating factor, if I remember right.
I'm looking it up. I want to see how this motherfucker...
It was probably from the jab, let's be honest.
It was the jab.
It was the jab. Yeah.
Died suddenly.
I always knew that's what would get him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other political shakeups going on in November 2004. Boris Johnson was sacked from the Tory front bench last night after his fresh allegations about his private life. The MP for him about that guy.
That sentence was too British for me to understand what you said. They did what to his sack?
Just wait. The MP for Henley and editor of The Spectator was relieved of his duties as shadow arts minister and party vice chairman.
They have a shadow arts minister? Is that like someone who's like behind the scenes doing the real art, or is it like puppets, light puppets that you do with your hands?
You got me, but...
All right, don't look it up. That's fine.
Yeah, no.
Shadow arts minister is the dopest sounding liberal arts degree that you can get at Tisch.
Yeah. He was apparently having an affair with Spectator columnist Petronella Wyatt, which is exactly as British as I imagine someone having an affair with Boris Johnson.
Was you having an affair with Petronella, yeah?
That's not a real person name.
Most Brits aren't.
Oh, speaking of real people, so this all I was like, well, I don't remember Boris Johnson having an affair, and so it led me to like the relationship section of his Wikipedia page. He was married father of four at this stage. Between 2000 and 2004, Johnson had an affair with Petronella Wyatt, resulting in terminated pregnancy and a miscarriage. In April 2006. The News of the World alleged that Johnson was having an affair with Guardian journalist Anna Fazakerly.
Another fake name. Not real.
Anna for Zachary. Anna for Zachary.
That's like if you get pulled over, you don't have your ID on you, but you've got like a fucking eight ball in your pocket, yeah. And the cop asks your name. For Zachary.
Yeah. Oh, for Zachary.
How's it spelled? You know, like it sounds.
Yeah, it's spelled for Zachary like it sounds.
In 2009, Johnson fathered a daughter with Helen McIntyre, an arts consultant. In 2013, the Court of Appeal discharged an injunction banning reporting of his daughter's existence. The judge ruled the public had a right to know about Johnson's, quote, reckless behavior. There had been speculation that he might have had another child from an extramarital affair. Due to an appeal judge stating in 2013, the father's infidelities resulted in the conception of children on two occasions.
Yeah.
In 2021, he said he had six children. Anyway, the long story short, he actually didn't get divorced from the woman he was married to until 2018. So he had like four public affairs, and I don't know how many children with the other lady.
I love that in Britain, like that, like you look at Boris Johnson as an American, and you're just like, that guy can't possibly have fucked. But in England, they're like, oh, that's a solid seven, yeah.
He's got twice as many teeth as the national average, don't he?
Yeah, I've seen him chew bread. He chewed in, his teeth did not fall out.
I do, you know.
Right, crusty bread it was.
Maybe one day AI will be advanced enough that we can insert Bojo into the scene where McNulty and his partner are talking about infidelity in the hotel room.
Yes. And McNulty offers to give Boris Johnson the magic fingers. Yes. Mm.
Finally, always go to the New York Post for our anchor story. Mm-hmm. Hearts burn for Marlboro Man. I don't know if you guys remember the Marlboro Man of Fallujah.
No,
anybody?
I do not.
A Crickets, Fallujah. Right?
A Fallujah. I remember the
regular
guy.
I remember the other.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one of Texas, I believe.
Yeah. The one who died in Thank You for Smoking, the movie.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this season of The Wire is an Iraq war allegory.
Sure.
Everybody was head over heels for the Marlboro Man on November 14th. The young Marine, dubbed the Marlboro Man after his front page appearance in the Post, has become a celebrity poster boy for the U.S. effort in Fallujah, a heartthrob to women everywhere and a hero in his hometown.
Well, not women everywhere. Like Fallujah, most of Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not everywhere. Yeah,
probably not. Yeah. He could be a bad boy. He has
that's
that
true.
Bad boy appeal there.
Yeah, got that bad boy appeal.
But there's one drawback.
Occupy me, daddy. Sorry.
There's one drawback to being the Marlboro Man. Everyone keeps bumming your smokes. If you want to write something, Marine Lance Corporal James Miller, 20, told a reporter this week, tell Marlboro I'm down to four packs and I'm here in Fallujah till who knows when. Maybe they can send some and they can bring down the price a bit. Marlboro declined to comment. Miller's rugged and muddied portrait, snapped after 12 hours of bloody combat with guerrillas, became a powerful symbol of the American forces' gritty effort to retake Fallujah.
Wow. I've completely missed this.
Well, it's okay. They've got that video game coming out now, so you can catch up on your Fallujah facts.
Is there an Iraq War video game coming out?
Oh, yeah, there's a Fallujah video game coming out.
Oh, is it Call of Duty? Call of Fallujah Duty? Is it
Fallujah? I don't know.
I gotta check it out, dude. Yeah, I was playing one of the other Call of Duties where you're like fighting cartels, and I'm just like, yeah, this is how it works.
Not hardcore enough. No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Marlboro Man, did he die?
No, he did not die.
Oh,
this
is not an obit. This is just a fluff piece about a hot guy.
Yeah, well, it's actually like a New York piece, fluff piece for the New York Post almost, because they published the original photo. So, of course, it's kind of like self-flattering to be like, oh, he's a big star now. Everybody loves him. Everybody's raving about that thing we published.
Funny.
There was another profile of him in Rolling Stone in like 2009, you know, PTSD and the normal...
Yeah,
the normal stuff,
like what happens and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but yeah, so that's been the Remember When machine.
Okay, now it was the Back in the Day machine.
So, yep, you're right. Back in the day machine. Back in the day, we were all talking about the Marlboro Man of Fallujah and the Iraq insurgency, and we were watching a show that was an allegory for it.
That's true. So it connects. Before we continue on, I got to say this week's Balmer B story is based on a song that, I don't know, I feel like Marlowe's character in just in vibe is supposed to kind of give you a 50 Cent feel to him.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, just like that. he's got kind of the, I don't know, the vibe of 50. So,
well, the whole not opening his mouth very wide when he talks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the squinting, the kind of like cowboy-esque squint he's got, where he's just like, so anyways, this is today's Balmer B story.
Episode over. Amsterdam. The cops policing Amsterdam.
I want to say this one sucks.
He cannot stand by no more. Specifically Colloquio. Calls it moral midgetry. Yells at an 8-year-old. Cause peanut butter makes him swole. And Colloquio threatens him. Cause the little kid has never had a can of Chef Boyardee.
Every night I talk to God.
Alright, well, so that's that.
Sounded great. I can't wait to listen to it at the end of the episode.
Yeah, at the end of the episode, you can hear the full thing, and there's a freestyle at the end. Okay.
Oh, nice.
So let's talk about this episode. A lot happens in this episode. This is probably this is a point in every season of The Wire where all the payoff starts happening, so this continues that trend where all of these storylines that have been, you know, kind of been placed like dominoes are finally all collapsing. Some from, you know, just this season, like Amsterdam, and some from, you know, like last season, vis-a-vis fucking D'Angelo Barksdale's murder. So in this episode, we have this fucking McNulty finally getting some payoff for planning this, you know, planning to get Stringer in trouble by making sure everyone knows that D'Angelo was murdered, most likely by him. Bunny is got Amsterdam going on, and he is finally seeing that this is not the happiest place on earth that he had hoped it would be. He thought it would be Drug Disneyland, and it's turning out to be a little bit harder to do that. A lot of stuff going on. Vince, what'd you think of this episode?
We've talked about how season three feels like the studio note after season two. You know, season two was maybe realistic at the expense of being a TV show at times. And I feel like this episode is one of the most like TV episodes of The Wire. Like, people don't usually state the conflicts out loud and lay it all on the table. But this is like maybe above any other Wire episode. You got Stringer and Avon laying it on the table. You got McNulty calling out Dee's mom in the police headquarters. That's a very TV scene. But, you know, like the acting and the writing is otherwise so good that I don't mind it when it gets a little TV on us and The Wire. Like, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Robert, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I like this episode. The Amsterdam plot line, I mean, part of why I picked this one to guest on is that it was one of my favorite parts of the show.
Yeah.
I think they do a pretty good job of kind of like actually working through some of the reasons, like some of the positives of doing, like being able to actually get access to like like STD prevention kits,
right,
and like healthcare kind of stuff to people through this sort of thing. They kind of wave over, like when stuff kind of like this is done in other countries, one of the benefits is that like people still OD because they're buying drugs, but they tend to OD in public around people, which they mention briefly in this, but it's sort of mentioned as like, yeah, there's still problems, as opposed to like, well, but if they're ODing in front of a cop and they get an ambulance immediately, that probably means less people are dying from their drug overdoses.
It means they could live, yes.
Plus, they got some people there to put ice on their balls, which always works, according to this episode.
That's right.
That's how you... It's better than Narcan. You heard it here.
Yeah, exactly.
No, so I like it a lot. Obviously, it is like the most you have to kind of suspend your disbelief probably over the whole run of The Wire. Because like the whole time this is happening, I mean, I know eventually the press gets wind of it, but it's like, man, like hour one, the cops have cordoned off in neighborhoods for people to sell like cocaine to like random townies. Like it opens with like presumably some like white kids from the burbs or whatever, at least like a different part of town buying some coke. Yeah. Like the moment that starts happening, like 30 different journalists are like writing the same article about it. Like,
we got a white girl. We got a white girl
buying cocaine.
Signal 13, signal 13. A really cute white girl is talking to black people. Can we get the National Guard in here? Yeah, no, it's you do have to suspend disbelief to also believe that they wouldn't have been immediately snitched on cops.
It's like the gratifying kind of like when you get something out of suspending disbelief. It's not just like a stupid. You want to believe the thing that they're doing in the storyline. So, of course, you're willing to forgive it certain moments.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're willing to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, the only place where you're really suspending disbelief here is that they wouldn't immediately get shut down, that this would be allowed to go on without command knowing about it. Whereas everything else in terms of the results of what's happening in Amsterdam are actually super nuanced, because he's not, solving the war on drugs. You know, they're not trying to make it sound like this is all you got to do is legalize drugs in an area and then you got it. It's like, no, you see that there's kind of creates a public health crisis, creates a little economic crisis for some of it.
Yeah.
And even less crime because of it. Like he does achieve his goals, which is like, what if there was just fucking less goddamn crime all over the Western District? And we kind of just, you know, put all the people who sell drugs and want to buy drugs over there and make sure they don't have any guns.
And even the Deacon character, like I think in another show or maybe even in real life, like I feel like the Deacon would come in and would be like, hey, this is pretty bad. You got to like stop doing this. But he doesn't do that. Like you think he's going to do that. And then it sort of pivots into him trying to figure out how to make this whole thing work. And, you know, go into the various nuances of the different things that it would take to make it work from, you know, getting public health people involved to, you know, just having infrastructure. That's the word I was looking for to deal with all that.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I like the way you phrased it, that like, it's asking you to suspend your disbelief, but for a purpose. And like the other part that I think embodies that is the bit where like the drug dealers who are getting like stuck up by somebody and robbed are like, look, man, like go up to the cops and are like, look, if we can't have our guns here, then you guys have to be our muscle, right? You have to like protect us from getting robbed. And I thought that's an interesting thing to that's an interesting like thing to explore. You do have to suspend your disbelief that the cops wouldn't just be like, kick us a percentage.
Right.
Like, of course, like we will absolutely be your muscle like we do all over the place, but you've got to pay us.
Yes.
But it's worth it because it's another interesting question that you're getting explored.
Yeah. You know, what I like is that because this is a slow build, you know, that means the suspension of disbelief is only going to last for so long because we are already seeing the end of Amsterdam. As this episode goes along, you see where it's going, and it all happens through a cop who we've seen on this show before, but we've never known his name, and we just know I've known him
dumb
as
haircut guy,
Proud Boy cop, and his name Officer Anthony Colicchio. It's Colicchio, like okay,
like Tom Colicchio, like spelled the same and everything.
All right, listen, guy gets off the force and he starts
judging Top Chef.
Okay,
it's a Dago language, as we've established.
Wow.
Yes. So we learn that this guy is not happy to be participating in this experiment. Watching him throughout this episode, kind of just storm off in various different ways. Like he blows up and gets mad for a thousand different reasons. Some of them, you know, you can, you know, if you put yourself in the shoes of like racist cop guy, you're like, I can understand how he's like, I don't want to help serve and protect these yo's, you know. It's yeah. like, yeah, okay, that sounds like, you know, something a cop would mm-hmm. do. And then he also just yells at a kid who's like, I'm allergic to peanut butter.
Threatens to beat his ass for having a peanut butter allergy. A hungry child. I had to rewind it because I was like, wait a second, did the kid ask him for drugs? Did I like forget that part? I was like, no, he's asking him for food. Like, yeah. He just can't eat. It'll kill him.
I have a clip of that scene.
Yo, I get swole for peanut butter. You got anything else?
Fuck I look like to you, Chef Boyardee?
Who?
Hey, when all this bullshit falls apart, I want to kick your butt.
So all I can think,
I mean, how dare you not recognize the contributions of Chef Boyardee, one of yes. our mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. famous Italian Dago immigrants.
That's all I can think mm-hmm. is he's like, this is the last straw.
Yeah.
is that they do not respect our
this
most,
8-year-old.
This 8-year-old does not our greatest cultural contribution to American cuisine, Chef Boyardee and SpaghettiOs.
Like this storyline is relatable for a few reasons. First, I feel like there's no way there's no way to piss off your employees faster than to tell them to do something differently than what they've been doing for years. Like,
sure.
Oh, I got to use mm-hmm. this. Like, I mean, when your company switches like email programs, it's like, oh my God, are you fucking yeah. kidding me with yeah. this shit? It's like, it's so infuriating. So it's that combined with when you like deliver a great reference and some kid is like too young to get the reference. Like those are the two things. Like if you want to make any American mad, those are so like two
you,
great ways to do it.
Is
make
he blew at him because he made him feel old.
Yeah. Well, no, it's because he's like, oh, this is a sweet joke that I just did. And the kid's like, who? And he's like, God damn it, these God kids today.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm too poor for Chef Boyardee.
I can't even rip on these kids. Right. Fuck. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is pretty great. He also, watching him get mad, when the guys are all getting together doing the identikit, which I think is my favorite scene in this episode.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Does it do butts?
Yeah, so good. To the background on this, so we see in the opening, someone gets robbed in Amsterdam, and they yell at the cops and say, hey, you know, don't you have a fucking job to do? You know, they want to file a police report, which makes Colicchio very mad because I think the other thing he hates is paperwork. So he's just fuck you.
Well, that's a tangent off of having to do your job differently than you have been.
So they take the kids over to the Western and they play with the identikit and it is goddamn just one of my favorite scenes. And I have a clip of that scene.
And the eyes, he had little beanie eyes. You haven't
seen what the fuck is beanie eyes?
How do you know how to do this?
And how you don't know how to do this?
Great line also.
Make his ears stick up.
Why?
Because I told you to. Oh, shit. Give him light eyes.
Why?
Because I fucking told you to. Can you make him cross? Fucking cool.
Now, Chinese optimize like Beyonce.
Jesus Christ.
My favorite line in the episode.
Those lips a little bit. Yeah, let's deal with that.
Yo, you got one of these dust asses?
So real quick.
That's a good scene.
It's so perfect. Yeah. And I want to
point. That's writing right there.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, this is why they strike. Because AI cannot write that. I just want to point
absolutely
out.
Absolutely not.
that Herc is, I think he is trying to make Dozerman's girlfriend or Freeman's girlfriend.
Mm. Oh, that does look like Freeman's girl.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay, so this is funny because like in that first part, when Herc was, I thought there was going to be a payoff. Like I thought for sure he was going to make like a rude caricature of another cop that he works with or someone.
Yeah,
so I was a little disappointed in that lack of payoff, but then it brought me all the way back with Chinese up them eyes a little bit, like Beyonce.
Amazing.
Just amazing. Incredible line.
If you tried to make ChatGPT write that, it would tell you that it's not allowed to use phrases like that.
Chinese up her eyes like Beyonce. Fantastic.
So
incredible.
Good. And it is, I think, you know, it's perfect because at the end of the day, Herc is as much of a horny little boy as those literal children who are there filing a report.
All on the same level.
Yeah, it's fucking great where he's just like, oh man, we can do anything with this power. Like, this is someone who, like, an updated version of this is making those porn deep fakes of, like, your friends. You know, that's what Herc would be doing. He would be deep faking stuff.
I'm imagining, like, you know, because he's got to be in his 50s now, Herc, you know, near retirement from the Baltimore police, getting a hold of, like, Midjourney and just, like, disappearing. Just they find him dead of dehydration, like, 5 days later, just masturbated himself to death.
You look
he
at
was
it,
just
like
a week away from retirement.
All of his fucking, like, prompts just said, now even bigger titties. Now more bigger.
So we wanted to go.
Just like Googling a series of celebrities' bra sizes so that he could input it into the engine.
He's got two monitors. One just has Wiki Feet updating every 30 seconds.
Suddenly he's wearing reading glasses that you've never seen him wear before.
Oh man. Yeah, Herc is you know, it's like he has the heart of a child but the mind of a racist Baltimore PD cop. So
he's
it's
just pouring liquid from one beaker into the other, being like, oh well, we've Chinesed up her eyes like Beyonce. What's our next step?
He's wearing a lab coat.
somebody's got Chinese up her eyes like Beyonce on like a blackboard, like in a Beautiful Mind or whatever it is. And Herc comes along.
Oh man, yeah, no, I want to see Herc just figuring out how to use technology in order to masturbate. That is that's what he was built for. Unfortunately, he became a cop. But yeah, so the Nazi cop is basically just pissed off this whole time, and eventually they had this conversation in which a bunch of the Western people sit around and they're all like, someone should snitch. And I guess we'll see what happens with that later in the series. But let's move on. Let's talk about Avon, Stringer, Marlowe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, this was a fantastic episode with all three of those. Mostly because you see both Avon and Stringer in their respective completely diverting grinds. You see Avon has like decided that he can afford to go to war with both Marlowe and Omar at the exact same time.
Two fronts.
That's
war on two fronts, which
famously
only,
a good idea.
If only Slim Charles had been there for Napoleon. Who knows?
I know.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, but unfortunately, no one talks him out of it. Meanwhile, you see Stringer on his grind, getting the most played that he has been so far in this series. Like, you see him dealing with Clay Davis throughout season three. And you're like, I don't know. It looks like they're building a building. Maybe this is going good for him.
He's
going
to make some. Even like Clay Davis keeps making you think that you're going to make money by giving him lots of money without ever asking where it's going.
Right. Yeah. And like throughout the series or the season so far, I've been like, I don't know. It seems like, he's probably getting like ripped off a little bit here, but it seems like he's getting the things he wants. In this episode,
he's getting that free light bulb money, man.
Well, but he got that light bulb contract. Good for
him. This also is like another aspect. I don't know if it was intended as such, but this, like, if this is an Iraq war allegory, this fits in really well. Because how many people are making money off of like supplying the light bulbs to the invasion? Like someone there is definitely printing money by.
Yeah. He's he's private contractoring his ass off right now. And but I feel like this is the first time when I originally watched this series where I was like, oh, Clay Davis is selling this guy some magic ass beans, because like everything feels like a setup in this. And Stringer is the only one who seems to, like, he knows it could be a setup, but there's part of him that is like, just, he's in so deep that he has to believe that these guys aren't going to rip him off.
And I like the, like the, I like Clay Davis and Andy Krawczyk playing sort of good cop, bad cop with them, where, I mean, not really, they're both the good cop, but Krawczyk talking up some random guy who used to have a small
Coats. Chunky Coats. I have the scene with Chunky Coats. I am a, I'm a big Chunky Coats head. So let's play a little bit of that.
That's Ta-Nehisi's dad, Chunky.
Very good.
Oh, look at you. Oh, Chunky Coats.
Who's that?
You don't know Chunky? When I first met that fat man, he had an office so small you had to leave the room to change your mind. And 2 years ago, he started running with your man, Clay Davis. Look at you now, you big sassy bitch.
So then from this moment,
by the way, this guy is easily 20 to 30 pounds lighter than Andy Krawczyk. It feels like a little pot calling the kettle black kind of situation there.
Yeah. Well, you know how Polish people be. I'm sorry. I don't know where that came from. I just had to. What I love about this is that, like, in the scene previous with Clay Davis, Clay is convincing Stringer that he is not ready to, quote, run yet. That it takes 3 years to run, and that he must wait those 3 years and pay his dues, and then he will be able to run. I don't know what the fuck run means. I don't know if Stringer knows what run means.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He's pretending to understand the metaphor.
I think he's just like, you make money. Like, I think he's just like, I don't know. These guys are business guys. They're wearing suits. They're getting elected to public office. Run is probably something where I make more money. And this is just such a perfect setup, because he immediately runs in to Clay Davis's office and is like, I demand you take my money. Take it. And here it is.
In my world, you have any idea what I had to do to get where I am today? And when I say I'm ready, you best believe it.
Clay is like an evil genius in this way that I found myself, of all of the people on the show who have, you know, committed murders and all sorts of atrocities, I found myself being like, Clay is the most evil man on this show.
For sure.
By far. He's like the only one who I actually was like, I need justice.
Would you say the biggest bastard?
I would say, biggest bastard on the show. Okay. Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
But also the smartest, I think. Like,
he's so good.
He's
and the ballsiest, like consistently just extorting people that kill for a living.
Mm. Yeah. You got to have fucking nuts made of steel to be like, I'm going to rip off Stringer Bell. Like, it's crazy.
But he's also, it's the kind of, like, there's a whole we're all in the wake of like the death sub news,
that's true.
Which is another example of, you've got all these people who made a bunch of money doing something that has nothing to do with the sea, and then a grifter who was able to convince them this thing was safe. It's this kind of, people are very prone to this, if you get really good at one specific thing, to thinking that your competence transfers.
Yeah.
And Stringer's like so good at a specific part of the game that he kind of tricked himself into thinking he knew anything at all about the rest of the world.
Totally. That's 100% true. It is. And that is, I think, you're 100% right. Every rich person believes that they're not just rich because, whatever, luck or family or whatever happens, they believe it's because they are smarter than everyone. They just have a better brain. And Stringer is one of those people who's just like, my brain's really big. Mm-hmm. I fuck good and I make
too
the
good
money.
For, you know, the for drugs. I'm too good for the like for this world. I got to move up, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, I want to get into the world of business. And so it makes him such a prime target to, like, you know, go 2 miles deep into the sea and implode immediately, you know. And I could see Stringer starting up that business, you know, trying to make his own submarine. You know,
he's gonna turn his he's like the drug dealing equivalent of James Cameron. He turns like slinging crack into setting foot in the bottom of the Marianas Trench.
You know, he sees where the opening in the market is. A lot of people want to go into the sea, see some shit, deep sea stuff, glow in the dark fish.
I can put you into the sea. Baltimore's a port, you know, that makes sense.
They got a sea and they got a lot. Lots of shit down there, mostly guns, but
he's got
other,
like,
stuff too.
Fucking Ziggy piloting a submersible.
Ziggy's just piloting it with his fucking laptop. Yeah, no, he's Stringer is someone who is in his own imploding submersible right now, but doesn't know enough to stop it from happening. Oh, hey, it's Brent Flyberg, the producer. What's up?
What's up, man? Good to see everybody. We have some exciting new ads for Undersea Adventures that I think our listeners are going to want to hear, so we should take it right now.
Okay. Well, while you guys are thinking about going deep, deep underwater and seeing what's out there, you know, maybe it's time for you to simultaneously listen to these ads about the sea. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Matt Lieb here. Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? Not like around, you know, the block or whatnot. I'm not saying have you run into him at your local grocery store. I'm saying, have you seen what his body looks like? He is still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. And what's even more shocking is he somehow looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Since I started drinking Morning Kick, and yes, I have started drinking it. Why? Because they sent me some. And honestly, I've never felt better. My digestion is smoother, my body looks leaner, and I have energy all day. I feel younger, even though I am a young man. I feel even younger, bro. Like, if you know anything about me, you know that I'm someone who is obsessed with gut health, all right? You know, I drink kombucha. I like a probiotic drink. I do all sorts of things to make sure that my gut is healthy. And I'll tell you, this is actually great for your gut. And it actually tastes good, which is not something you can say about kombucha. Let's be honest. And another thing I loved about it, easy to prepare. I love that it's just something you just mix with water and stir. I didn't have to, like, you know, learn to make a culture from a SCOBY or whatever. Like, I just had to buy some Morning Kick, mix it with water, stir it, drink it down. And it tasted great. So if you want something that tastes good, makes your digestion feel smoother, and make your body look leaner and give you more energy, try Morning Kick. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. Okay, so Stringer is getting took. Meanwhile, Avon, he's got his plan to get Marlo. At this point in the series, I'm starting to think, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong here, that Marlo is really good at not getting killed by Avon.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of his main skills.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could call him the James Cameron of that, for sure.
Exactly.
It's probably because he doesn't, like, he barely has sex, and he doesn't drink, and he doesn't dance. He's mm-hmm. like, I only focus on my money and my pigeons, and that's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, not dying at the hands of Avon Barksdale. Yeah, no, Marlo in this episode, this is the first time you see him outside of the context of, like, you know, hanging with his friends, either selling drugs or hiding out in the pigeon coop. And you see him, like, doing a human activity, you know, like going to the club. And he has a conversation with a woman, and I have the clip of it, where
she's like, I like your eyes. They're like cat eyes, which works a lot better than when I say, like, hey, your eyes make you look like a pussy.
Yeah, that never works, dude.
Yeah, no.
But when he sees a girl giving him the eyes, he opens with like his pickup line is, "What you looking at?" Which is very hostile. And then when she says, "You have cat eyes," he asks the most, like, spectrum question I've ever heard. He just goes, "What kind of cat?" What kind of cat is the question he asked? And I'm not sure why, except for I think maybe he's a pigeon guy. He might be a cat guy as well.
He might be a cat guy. Yeah, it does imply that, like, one answer would be better than another to him.
Right.
Like, there's a cat that would offend him and a cat that he would take as a real compliment.
Yeah. Siamese, what the fuck is wrong with you, girl? Snoop, kill this lady. Yeah, so I have the clip of Marlo finally doing some human stuff.
Looking at you.
You.
Yeah.
I like your eyes. They like cat eyes.
What kind of cat?
What? What
kind of cat my eyes like?
A big cat. Yeah. You want to dance? You want a drink?
No, I don't do that neither.
What do you do?
Rock and roll McDonald's. Rock and roll McDonald's.
Gotta have a little rock and roll McDonald's in every episode. He farts.
Yeah.
Pretty nice. Pretty
good,
nice.
Good for you, Marlo.
The way I interpreted this whole sequence is that he's constantly like checking her story. Like, he's looking for her to screw up her story, because I don't think he quite buys it the entire time. So he's he's asking her name twice. What kind of cat am I? Where are you staying?
Yeah. Like, do you have any friends here? Who'd you come with? Mm-hmm. Who'd you come with? Yeah. And then, like, okay, I am horny enough to risk death for sex, but it has to be guarded by Chris and Snoop and in my car. And he does. And at this point, I'm thinking, like, he is incredibly paranoid, but he's probably wrong. Like, it looks like this might be just a girl who likes him. But I was wrong about that.
Well, I think the tell was the, you know, they get sweaty in the back of his SUV, and he like wheezes into her neck meat for like four pumps, and and then she goes, "Oh, that was nice."
Yeah.
And like, was it
though? You're like, no way, four pumps. He is a cat though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's got the spines in there to keep her from running away.
Jesus Christ. Is that true? Do cats have spine dicks? Is that really a thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge, covered in spine. You know what? Watch the movie Tremors, the first one. It's just like, it looks just like those worms.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, just thousands of spines. Yeah.
Why would God build the cat to have that kind of dick?
What's really fucked up are duck penises. We have some ducks over here, and like their dicks are like corkscrews, and sometimes they'll just be like fucking in the middle of the day, and you like walk up or whatever to feed them, and like it'll spook them, and so the lady
and then
will
they'll
like
spin
run
and
away.
Spin and spin and fly.
It'll just be flopping. It'll be this corkscrew penis on the ground, and the male duck's like waddling after the lady with this like corkscrew of penis just sort of like bouncing around on the ground.
And then you hear that sound like someone just opened a wine bottle. You know, they finally got it loose from there.
Just watching the duck flop in his corkscrew dick at chasing after another lady duck, and you're like, this could be us, but you play. Yeah, so he has sex, Marla has sex, and then he is starting to get suspicious, and she invites him to a little date at a place where they can get some lake trout. And that means this is time for our segment, Lake Trout.
Fried chicken, lake trout. No lake, no trout. Bitch, I'm from Baltimore, you say you was, I never
see you. All right, lake trout. Let's talk about it. Vince, what is lake trout?
You didn't prep me for this.
I didn't prep myself for this.
It's a fish. It's like a whiting or something like that. And the lake trout is a freshwater char living mainly in the lakes in northern North America. Mm. It can be variously known as Siskoet, paper belly, and lean.
Lean?
Wow.
Yeah.
Lean?
You
like codeine?
So you could do lean and lean.
I love it. The first lean was actually just a trout.
Yeah.
That's fun to know.
Baste a trout in codeine and see if that fries up good.
Yeah. Probably would, though. I mean, people are doing the thing where they're like, you know, making NyQuil chicken. I feel like lean trout.
Yeah, you're right.
It's not the first time that people have been like, maybe I put drugs in food. It is a fun thing to do.
Yeah, just to go. I can't get through the paywall. Never mind.
Foiled again by having to pay for the internet.
Well, I don't pay for the Baltimore Sun. Like
you should.
I know.
You should.
Try
you know
a
this
12-foot ladder. Sometimes that gets you through the paywall.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't work. Baltimore Sun figured out how to not do 12.
Is it on archive.is? Okay.
Hell yeah.
I got it. Okay. Here at the lake in northwest Baltimore, a few dollars buys a passel of lake trout, fried to crunchy, crispy perfection, and, if you like, doused with hot sauce. Get it with a side of candied sweets and mac and cheese. Locals know it's not really trout and isn't really from a lake. There are no natural lakes near Maryland. The real fish is whiting, or more scientifically, Merluccia. I don't care about the scientific name.
No, I want to know.
Yeah, from the cold waters off the northeast coast of the United States.
Okay.
Standing outside awaiting their order, Della and Lee Mooring of Owings Mills shrug when asked why their dinner is called lake trout. I guess we should have asked, said Lee, 68.
I love living your whole life eating something and just
your
being
entire
like,
life.
Yeah.
Lake trout is a more economical choice than the region's more famous seafood offering, crabs, and has been a favorite lunch and dinner item for years. Find it on the menu at places like Lake Trout and Edmondson Village, which I think is the one in
this
episode.
That's the one in this episode, yeah.
Lake Trout 2 near Towson, or even Lake Trout 3 in Windsor Mill.
Wow, what a choice.
Yeah, you're going to go to 1 or 2, possibly even 3.
It's unclear how the name lake trout for whiting came about, but Bill Devine of Fadley's Seafood at Lexington Market thinks it's a bastardization of late trout. Decades ago, fish that arrived to Lexington Market late in the season were referred to as late, L-A-T-E, Devine said. Being that Baltimoreans couldn't speak the King's English, it got corrupted
or
to
any
late,
English at all, because the accent is insane. Go on.
Yep. So, yeah, that's the story.
Okay, so that's where they go to possibly have their date, and And Snoop is there waiting to see, you know, just to see if the something fishy is going on. Pardon the. Fuck yeah. Oh, fuck. Nope. Oh, come on. There we go. I gotta get the reggae horn on that. So he goes over, or Snoop and Chris go over to check out the scene, and it turns out it is a trap, and Avon takes one in the shoulder. And I have a clip of the wonderful Chris and Snoop.
You get four trot on white, extra mayo on one, hot sauce on two, and the other with ketchup, and four orange sodas.
Go by the slow.
Got his ass. Mm-hmm. The fact that Avon went along to that shows to me that he is truly an overconfident fucking
very
idiot.
Overconfident.
Yeah,
He just thinks he's been in the game long enough that he's so smart.
Yeah.
They don't know anything. He did one honey trap, and that's gonna be it. I like to think that they didn't decide to shoot them until they saw him littering, and they were like,
yeah.
Fuck this guy.
Keep
now
these streets clean.
Yeah.
I love the idea that just Chris Partlow is mostly just a very strict conservationist, and he's just this is insane.
Shaking his head, a single tear rolling down his cheek when he sees that wadded up ball of wax paper hit the pavement.
Yeah. I was going to let him off with a warning, but now it's time for a 12-gauge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he jumped to that real fast. Shoots him right in the fucking shoulder. And
Right in the shoulder.
Yeah, and, you know, the guy next to him also gets killed.
Yeah, went through Tater. Avon just caught a couple pellets, luckily for him. Yeah.
Tater's dead. Rico is dead earlier in this episode. I mean, all his boys are getting fucking killed. But yeah, dude. And so it's just like one thing I love about Avon throughout this season is every other scene in which Marlo bests him, he goes, all right, now I'm serious. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get his ass.
He's and then getting all hyped up.
He gets bested again. He's shot in the shoulder. He's like, oh, it's going down, baby. Oh, next time. Oh, he's about to. Before, I wasn't serious. Before, I was just playing. But now the game gets real. And it's like, dude, maybe you just maybe you're just not as good as Marlo is at this.
When they're sewing him up, he's like all getting hyped up about, you know, the fact, now we're going to fucking war. Now we're going to war. Yeah. Then Stringer just beats the piss out of him. Because he tries to get into a fist fight with like shotgun pellets in his shoulder.
Yep. I mean, again, another example of him being so overconfident. It's like, bro, you are on the injured list right now. I understand that you want to, you know, be the king. But maybe take a breather, take a half a break.
It's like, you know, why have dudes if you're not going to use them?
Why have dudes?
You know,
delegate. This is the thing that Stringer gets. He's like, you know, I got dudes. Of course, all of his dudes are fucking him, but they're still
dudes. All his dudes are fucking. Now, Marlo's the best at having dudes because Marlo knows that if you hire children young enough, the betrayal lobe of their brain isn't active.
That's
so
right.
They're going to deal straight with you.
Exactly.
You know? That's the way to do it.
Yeah, he understands that. He's like, Fagin from Oliver Twist, you know? Mm-hmm. Fagin understood how to have a crew of kids, you know?
Yeah.
You guys big Oliver Twist
Faganites.
You get Faganites. Faganites.
Yeah, I do a lot of Twist / Fic. It's uncomfortable.
Good.
Yeah.
You're right. Stringer does beat the piss out of him, and for a very good reason, which we will get into once we talk about what's happening with McNulty in this episode that leads up to that moment.
McNulty.
McNulty, this is one of my favorite fucking McNulty episodes, because it is, he is both simultaneously doing hilarious dumb guy shit, like trying to be racist and having it backfire on him, trying to do detective work, and at the same time, you realize, like, McNulty is a one of the biggest pieces of shit on this show.
He's so cool.
He's a cool guy. Let's be real. Yeah. This is a show about one of the coolest guys. But watching him take this plan to, you know, this whole thing with D'Angelo not killing himself and him trying to expose, you know, that is because he's just will do by trying to get Stringer by whatever means necessary.
Yeah.
And that means that this will lead to D'Angelo's mother showing up to the police station, and fucking McNulty is such a dickhead. It's just so mean to her that I'm like, oh man, cops are bad.
Yeah.
It's true. It is true, man. I mean, he's like, he is just, he's making her cry and shit.
He basically says, like, well, you didn't care about your kid, so, you know, you wouldn't want to know anything about this. Very cold.
Yeah, super cold. Super fucking cold. And I think he thinks he's justified because, like, she did make him take the years, but also because he's like, listen, if this comes back to, you know, getting Stringer somehow in trouble so we can fucking, like, arrest him, then it's all worth it. And I'm like, I don't know if... Listen, I've hated a lot of people in my life, but I don't think I could ever exploit their, like, a grieving mother in order to get back at them. I think there's, like, limits to my spite that McNulty doesn't have.
I don't know. I've never had a grieving mother to exploit, so I can't really say if I would or I wouldn't, you know?
Yeah. You've never been in the position to exploit the grieving mother, so you don't know if you would.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like white rotter rafting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you handle
one of those
it?
Things, you know, it's like I've never had to knock on wood.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that if I was, I could pass, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's fun because that band went on to exploit a grieving family by making an album about George Floyd.
Is that no?
Did they really? What?
Oh, you guys haven't heard? Oh man,
the Mighty
yes,
Boss
indeed.
Tones did.
They did a whole album about it, and there's a song about George Floyd dying where they call him Georgie the whole song.
Oh no!
And it's like, I don't think he went by that. You can't just like come up with a nickname for a murder victim like your friends, like you're talking about your buddy.
Wow. Holy shit.
It's remark. The refrain is, Georgie, please stay. They took your breath away.
Fuck.
Like, it is bad.
It takes a lot to be like, to have less tact than Bono, but I think.
I know, right?
I did not know that they outdid David Guetta. Like,
yeah, it's like. I love me some ska, but no one in that historic moment in America was thinking, you know whose take on this we need? It's the mighty, mighty Boston.
You know
the mightiest take?
I feel like they probably just, remember when everybody was changing their avatars to black squares? Like the mighty, mighty Bostones just saw that and they're like, you know what we could do? We could just like have a bunch of these. And then add some white squares to it, and boom. It's
boom.
Like somebody raised the ska flag over the city of Gotham.
Oh, wow. Holy shit. Well,
good stuff.
You learn something new about the Mighty Mighty Boston's every day on this pod. That's
right.
That is wild. So... Mm-hmm. I don't remember how we got there, but I think it was talking about exploiting a grieving mother. he's, you know, exploited her. She's freaking out. She's talking to Stringer. But before that, I'm sorry. I think favorite McNulty scene was him thinking he would relate to the cop by being racist. Mm-hmm. And I have a clip of that.
I mean, this is just typical of urban America's of simplistic assumptions about rural America, you know?
Yeah, oh, 100%.
That's what's happening here.
Yeah, yeah. And I love it, too, because you're just like, I bet McNulty thought he was doing something here where he was just like, listen, I'm not racist, but I'm going to convince this guy I am. And I'm like, no, McNulty, you're actually racist, too.
No, yeah.
You will literally do anything to catch this one black guy. Like, you yeah. are kind of racist.
Whole damn town's going to hell in a handbasket. And guess who's running the show?
Who
do you think? Department, City Hall, the courts. Shit, the courts. And God have mercy on any poor white.
Who was he talking about there? Was he talking about the Jews?
Yes.
I think he was talking about the Jews there.
I thought it was the Dagos.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, that we know that in real life, the Dagos do control the courts and all of the
we do.
Criminal justice system. But
yeah, I'm actually running the Supreme Court for us this week. There's a big Gabagool case coming up. We gotta make sure that one breaks our way.
Boy, going to trial. That's when everybody's got their ass in the air talking about justice. I mean, they're not all so bad. Actually, it's a lot of good ones.
I'm on the radio if you need me.
Some very good ones.
Is there anything specific I can help you with while you're down here, detective?
You know, you should meet my partner. You'd like her.
Your partner there. Bit of an asshole.
For real.
Turns out that cop was an ally, and I fucking love it, dog. I fucking love
so
it.
It's so funny.
It's so great. It's so fucking good. He's coming in there with his, like, you know, liberal city mindset of like, oh, these fucking Dumfries, Virginia cops are just a bunch of boss hogs out here, and I'm gonna get this security camera footage. It's like he could have done it without all that racism, but you know, he's a cop. Mm-hmm. Cops, they need to do racism, or else, you know, it's like sharks.
It's like how shark. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They got it.
Jinx, hey, you two.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you guys have to kiss.
You owe me some coke. Uh-huh.
I liked in that scene where McNulty was trying to... Sorry, Dominic West is playing McNulty trying to like lean into a more southernish accent, yeah. But really it just makes Dominic West sound more English in that scene. Like, you hear his accent slip multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, his accent slips a lot throughout this episode to the point where I remember reading... an interview with him at one point where like the cast had to get together or like his friends on the cast, like Wendell Pierce and stuff, were like, you got to try a little bit harder. Like, you, yeah. Like he had sort of low key checked out of the show, like halfway through it, because he was just like, you know, he was the star of a show that he probably was watching and is like, I don't get it. This is boring. And, I think he was checked out of it a bit, and you can see the result of that is he just drops his accent occasionally. It's, you know, and then
I just
assumed
that was the director making a statement that the Baltimore accent has been fake all along.
That's,
right. They're all just pulling over a con on us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like the way that frog would only dance when only the kid was there,
mm-hmm,
but we're all the kid. And, you know, fucking, we're trying to tell people, hey, this is fake. And then as soon as the camera's on them, they're like, oh, you ever go to the ocean? You go lake trout? That's not a fucking accent. That's a guy making fun of me. That's a guy doing a voice. Why is there accent ableist? Jesus. Yeah, so McNulty,
it's because they're all a little bit hard of hearing from living so close to the docks, like all that unloading and unloading, it gets really loud,
right?
And after, you know, successive generations of that, you kind of get like a little bit of a funny accent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be
epigenetics of living at a port.
That's right.
My father's father was a dock man, was a stevedore out here. So
what did you say?
Huh? We're in the ocean. We eat crab in the ocean.
Okay.
You
got to
be on your post. And when you're on your post, you're the best policeman in the post. Shut the fuck up. That's not real. I'm sorry. I'm just
everyone, so when you cancel him, just remember it was not the rest of us doing that accent.
No, it was just me. Get canceled by all of white Baltimore. No, that's not what we sound like. We never sound. All right, okay.
You're not doing the cocaine jaw.
I'm trying. Oh yeah, that's right. Oh, your post. Yeah. Oh, that helps so much.
I'm telling you. It's because everybody in their hard of hearing and
police
do a lot of cocaine.
Policeman on his post is a bit. You're fucking worse. Okay. Yeah. So meanwhile, Kima and McNulty actually are able to get some work done, and they find out they get some security cam footage from the Sikh mart, and McNulty makes a Sikh and you shall find joke in front of a Sikh. Fun little pun.
I actually didn't get that the first. I don't
it's
think
not,
I watched
it's
it.
It's not
with,
really a joke.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah. I didn't get it, but until I had the subtitles on, I was like, oh, he's doing a play on words.
Oh,
I get it.
He's doing a play. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's doing a play on words. And, it's good enough. Meanwhile, the Brianna is spinning out and is just fucking. You know, she's trying to get in, you know, to a meeting with Avon, and Stringer is just like, I don't need this shit. Fuck off. Everything that cop told you was a lie. I'm the only one who tells the truth. It's all good. And you think that's probably the end of it. But then after Avon gets shot, Stringer's like, I've had enough of this bullshit. I'm going to go fucking talk to this guy. And Avon really goes off on him. Like, he's basically just is like, you're a bitch, you've always been a bitch, you're not hard, you're kind of dumb, you wear suits that don't fit right, you're hot but you're not as hot as you think you are. Like, that's one of the things he says. He's like, you think like you're conceited. Like, he said that to him in a cutscene. He said, you're conceited, you're a virgin who can't drive. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that was way harsh, Avon. And then in a fit of, I guess, trying to be hard or trying to prove that he's hard, he decides to blow up the whole fucking thing by telling Avon, I killed your fucking nephew. And, that's gotta be one of the stupidest things Stringer has done on the show. And he's done a lot of dumb shit, but probably.
Yeah, he reverted to gangster real fast when somebody accused him of not being a gangster. By the way, Brianna Barksdale, she's also that actress. First of all, she does an incredible job in this episode. But do you know she's also British?
What?
Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah. Oh.
Crikey. Her name from is, England.
Her name is Michael Hyatt, which... odd. Apparently Michael? Her real name. Yeah, her real name's Charlene, but she goes by Mark Michael for some reason.
That's kind of badass. I like
and,
it.
And yeah, and she's was born in Birmingham in England.
Birmingham? Isn't that Peaky Blinders, yeah?
Yeah.
No, it's pronounced Binghamton or some shit like that. You never pronounce British words the way they look.
Yeah, because that would be too fucking easy. Because, you know, these fucking no-teeth-having islanders.
I know.
It's, tired of the British. Done with you. That's crazy. I didn't know she was British, and she fucking kills it.
Hyatt has used the name Michael since high school when she was nicknamed for being a fan of American entertainer Michael Jackson.
Oh,
cool.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Little there trivia you for you guys.
Oh, we love trivia since we love it. But yeah,
boy,
so
I wonder if she, how she feels about that now.
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully she pivoted to like, Jordan, I think he's still like, I mean, we've reframed Jordan a little bit to be, you know, to show that he is kind of a piece of shit, but he's not like a Michael Jackson level.
He looks great compared to some of our heroes of the 90s.
Yes. 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 Yeah. I mean, let's just, in comparison, Michael Jordan, pretty great. Also, you know, the GOAT. So what can you say? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stringer, Avon go after each other. And I have a clip of the climax of this episode.
Are we past this bullshit?
I forgot. You know, I knew I forgot something. We the Trump brothers.
You know what? I look at you these days, you know what I see? I see a man without a country.
Not hard enough for this right here. And maybe
just maybe not smart enough for them out there.
Not hard enough.
Huh? Because I think before I snatch a life, I ain't in this bullshit.
Snatch a life? What life you snatch, huh?
Now he's sitting there thinking about it.
And should I tell him? Do I tell him?
I think at that moment he's thinking to himself, is it worth it to blow up everything I have built?
Yeah.
So that I can totally pwn this little bitch.
Yeah. Do I admit that I murdered my buddy's nephew for clout? Like, yeah. do I do it just for the yeah.
Yeah, you McNulty know? Would have said it right away because McNulty's highest goal in life ever is to win the current argument.
Yes,
so
that's
like
right.
If McNulty smells like, oh, I can win this argument, yeah, boom, he's going to do it. Stringer, yeah, he's a little more strategic, but not much.
Yeah, not by much. And you can see he's fighting with himself, that part of him that is just like, I could get him so good right now. I could, he'd be so pissed. But, you know, he's... He doesn't want to destroy everything he's built and lose his best friend.
It isn't. And I hadn't thought of it before, but like there is that similarity between McNulty and Stringer, that they're both really good in a specific niche and convinced that they're not shit ass incompetent in
right.
everything outside of that
right.
niche.
Yes. Convinced they are the smartest person in every room.
Well, this is something that I think about because I think I consider myself a smart person, but I also understand that I have no guile. And I think both of them are smart people that are convinced that they have guile and that they are like that they're master manipulators. And it's like, no, you guys are real bad at that part, actually.
Yeah, I think in order to think that, like, that is ego. When you, it's like, it's okay to be like, no, I understand that I am smart. But it's like the ego part of you is the one that's like, well, that means technically every decision I make is the right decision because it's the smartest decision in the room. And that's not always necessarily true.
No, you should, if you're emotionally healthy, you're like a great white shark, right? Where you're like, look, in this one specific instance, you know, find your niche and that you thrive at, and know that if you get outside of that niche, you will die gasping on the ground.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You got to know you're a great white. You got to be like, this is what I do. I see the food. I eat of the food.
All sharks are Italian.
All great white sharks are Italian.
I like the scene because, like I said when we were talking about this at the beginning, like The Wire is not usually a show where the characters state like the conflict of their story arc like as dialogue.
Yes.
But they do it in this scene. And it works, and I think it works partly because it like descends into like two nephews fighting each other.
Yes,
which also worked well in Succession, I think, in the past season it descends into like a slap fight.
Right, because that's how like people who love each other fight. It's like not just love, but it's also I guess it's loving and hating, which is on this similar spectrum, but like it's not the same as stranger fighting. It's like when you really fucking, it's your brother or your family or your fucking best friend, you're going to like slap fight and wrestle and you're going to go, like there's sounds you make that you don't make in a fight with like someone where you're trying to present yourself as like hard.
And Stringer immediately goes for the pressure point, which was,
showing
he is strategic in certain ways.
Yeah. Yeah. But also kind of dirty. Here it is.
A man stoking a hair saying that D'Angelo's death is no suicide. Man ain't wrong about that.
What?
Man.
Who's hard now?
But there you go, a life that had to be snatched, Avon.
Man, they got you, me, and fucking Brianna. No fucking way, man. Hell no. Now, I know you, that family. You love that nigga, but you want to talk that blood is thicker than water bullshit. Take that shit somewhere else, nigga. That motherfucker would have taken down the whole fucking show starting with you, killer. It's fucking everything and everybody.
Let me up.
Mm. I love it. I love that
it's good.
Shit. It's good. Good. You know what? The Wire? It's a good show, guys.
Pretty good show.
It's a good show. Good acting. No, I love that fight for the same reasons I think, Vince, you were saying, just like they fight like siblings. And I also love what you also pointed out, that Stringer is he knows he's going to win this fight, and Avon still thinks he can fight. He still is like, he is literally injured right now. He's got a fucking shell in his shoulder, and he has just got all the confidence in the world. It's just the exact same thing with Marlo, where he's just like, I know I just got out of prison and we don't have any, like, all of our good guys are gone. We only have Slim Charles and Cuddy left, and a bunch of them died, but I'm still getting in this fight. And it just shows their characters very, you know what?
Yeah.
It's good writing.
It's good writing. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. This show, there's a couple instances in this episode where I'm like, where I love David Simon and what he does with this show. The scene where the deacon talks to Bunny, he says to him, man, you're like the blind man and the elephant. And he doesn't actually say what the whole fucking parable is. I love that this has got to be the first piece of media that has treated its viewers like adults and is not like, I'm going to tell the story of the blind man and the elephant in full. How many fucking books, movies, TV shows are doing the blind man and the elephant, and they're expecting the audience to be like, wow, that's crazy. I never heard that before. It's the most annoying fucking thing I see in TV and in media. And in this one, they're like, we're not going to do that. We're going to assume you already know. We're going to assume you've heard about the blind guys. They don't know what the elephant looks like, and they're only describing the tusks and shit. So, I don't know. I personally love that.
I like that. I also think that Avon and Stringer are like the two wolves inside of you.
There are two wolves inside.
In that scene. Yeah, they're fighting.
Yeah. What are those two wolves? I've actually never heard the rest of that about wolves and there being two of them.
Yeah, you know, there's two wolves inside of you, so you got to keep a lot of dog treats in your jacket. That's
Is that it?
I think so. I'm pretty sure that's the way it goes.
That's how it goes? It's about dog. Yeah. Because
Well, if the treats are too far from you, then it's like an alien situation where the wolves are just going to like burst out. So you want to keep them
Yeah, you
want to
keep them well fed.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, so,
I shove a dog treat up my ass every night just to like keep them, you know, keep them happy.
Wow. All right. Well, today I learned about lake trout, and I learned that there's two wolves inside of you waiting to bust out like Alien.
Like Alien.
That's crazy, dog. Well, so that was my favorite scene, was probably that ending scene. Do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about that you are desperate to tell me about? Vince.
I mean, we've discussed it. Nothing beats Chinese up them eyes like Beyonce.
Sure. Yeah, that's...
pretty,
that's
pretty,
the yeah
I did I, so I did also enjoy the rural cop, like the first thing he says about Baltimore is how much the beers cost, because that is a thing that people who don't live in cities like, it's the first thing they go to. I can't believe it costs $8 for a dang beer.
I had a burger, $15.
This is quite an episode for like price shock, because you see all the prices at like the corner stores, and it's like, man, 99 cents for a 2 liter, fuck.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then $12 for two beers. That sounds nice. That's pretty
fucking
good.
Incredible.
That's not a bad price. Yeah.
Now in Biden's America, it's, you know, everywhere is Baltimore now. You know what I mean?
A world of Baltimores. That none of the convenience store guys keep their tapes. Like, they all have an excuse, but I think it's really because, like, I don't want to get caught up in a fucking police investigation.
Totally. It is absolutely
worth it for me.
Yes, it's absolutely like, no, first of all, I'm not going to help the cops. Fuck all y'all. Like, all of the convenience store owners are also armed. So they're like, no, I don't think I need the cops for this. Yeah, no, I love that. Robert, do you have a favorite scene or least favorite? Or have we already talked about it?
Yeah, I think I'll go with the Sikhs fucking with McNulty in that in that scene. Yeah, I think that's probably my favorite. I mean, my favorite scene is the machine that they're the Chinese optimized like Beyonce.
Yeah,
bit,
yeah, the identikit machine.
I had to pick another one. Yeah,
yeah. It's all very good. Storylines you didn't get to. Carchetti, he's doing his shit, and he's gonna run for mayor.
I would say my least favorite part of this episode is them trying to make political consultants look competent and valid, which I don't think. I think they're even worse grifters than Andy Krawcheck in real life.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, this is going to be the fifth or sixth time I've mentioned it, but it seems like that make me very suspicious of every time Barack Obama was like, oh, I love The Wire. Because it's like, why do you like it?
Which parts?
Which parts? What message from The Wire did you take from it? Those are all good favorites. I would say if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, it's The Law. I'll give it a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
I am legally bound to give it a solid B+.
Okay, well, you don't want to break the law.
Nope.
And Robert Evans, if you had to give it a letter grade, what would you give it?
You know what? I'm going to give it an A- because it does have one of my favorite quick little bits of Omar in here.
Oh, that's right.
Where he just like immediately rolls up to Hamsterdam and is like, no, fuck this. Yeah, I don't want any part of this.
I love that. Yeah, he immediately is like, this is a trap. Bye.
Yeah. That's instincts right there, baby.
Yes. That is, you know, the self-preservation instinct in Omar is stronger than literally everyone else on the show. And he's also, you know, just the superhero. So you see him doing something correct and you're like, of course he knows. He's the smartest one. So and that is an A- and 2 B+. That rounds out to, we'll call that a B+ episode of The Wire and an A+ episode of Pod Yourself The Wire. Robert Evans, thank you so much for coming on the show, talking The Wire with us.
Thank yous.
Thank you. Where can we find you on the internet?
You know, I got a podcast. It's called Behind the Bastards. You can find me there every week from now until the end of time.
Until podcasters are, you know, made obsolete by AI who knows how to do dick jokes.
Mm-hmm. Finally.
I mean, I think it's just a matter of time. Like an AI Matt Lieb is just like, Jar Jar, pussy!
That'll free us to live our dream working as longshoremen in Baltimore.
Dude, I would love it. I would love it to have like friends.
Mm-hmm.
Who I work with in real life and we lift stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would do anything for that kind of connection. That's why people, I think, become cops. Because they're like, I just want some other racist friends. So check out Behind the Bastards, wherever you get your podcasts. Robert Evans, once again, thank you so much for coming on. We love you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Wires. Patreon.com/fraudcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out in a street named Vince. We have two names this week. That's right, two names.
All right.
So we are actually coming down to the wire, pardon the pun, on names. If you haven't heard your name yet, you know, reach out to us. Let us know. Maybe you fell through the cracks. But for now, here are our $8 patrons for this week. Vince, the first name is Dave Crossman.
Dave Crossman.
Crossman.
We're going to call this guy BB. Because I had a Crossman BB gun. And it was a great BB gun.
Okay. I like that. BB. Dave Crossman. All right. And our second and final name is Rom Zirnov. Zirnov.
Hmm. We're gonna call this guy Z's Nuts.
That's so good. You know, because I was seeking CD and I was like, CD, he's gonna say CD's Nuts, and then I was like, but no, how's he gonna get the Z in there? And then you did it.
That's how you know I'm a pro.
I'm truly impressed with it. So thank you, Z's Nuts. Thank you, BB, for, you know, subscribing to the $8 tier and get yourself a shout-out street name. And hey, you can do it too. Patreon.com/Frogcast. Get yourself a street name. Get yourself those bonus episodes. It's a lot of fun. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, if you come at the king, you best not.
Hey, where are we? Oh, we're just going to go get some lake trout. Oh, lake trout. That's my favorite type of trout. Oh, I just wanted some fish from Baltimore.
Episode 8 of season 3. Marlo has cat eyes and also gets pussy. I didn't try hard with this bomber bee, but you piggy slurp the sloppy anyway. I see a row of the piggy slurping and oinking. They line up at the trough telling me to sing. A wire synopsis music parody. You piggy's trying to make my wife leave me. Marlo's men are better, 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 better than Avon Barksdale. Gets shot in his shoulder, gets told by Stringer Bell he murdered poor
Marlocus Club pussy with a price on his head. Avon is out of prison and wants everyone dead. Wants Marlo and even Omar buried in the ground. Shamrock bribes a social worker to get Omar found. When I rhyme, it's mostly gonna be about The Wire. I'm the greatest, like if Weird Al liked The Wire. Anyway, here's the synopsis. Stringer yells at Clay Davis, tells Stringer just to trust him, takes him to meet the faucet. Got a temper, Stringer? Go ahead, lose your head. Turn your back on Avon, confess and lose your friend. Avon on the ground, stringing his face, shelling his shoulder. Now it's a toxic workplace, roll credits, episode over.
Amsterdam, the cops policing Amsterdam are sick of Bunny, cannot stand by no more. Specifically Colloquio calls it moral midgetry, yells at an 8-year-old cause peanut butter makes him swole. And Colloquio threatens him cause a little kid has never had a can of Chef Boyardee.
Every night I talk to God, but he don't say nothing back. I know he's protecting me, but I still gotta watch The Wire. In my nightmares, people keep turning The Wire off, and I say, hey, what the hell? Why did you turn my favorite show off? And then Vince Mancini comes in the room, and everyone looks like doom, and everyone's going vroom vroom, because we're a car. We're going far, far into space. Space car. We're doing a new space race, bitch. Sucking on dicks is my favorite thing to do. And some people say, hey, are you really a Jew? Because your mom's not Jewish, and therefore you can't be a Jew too. And I say, hey, have you ever heard of us? Shut the fuck up, you Manny man. Suck a dick of eating butts again. Off the top of the dome, I'm doing rappy raps and thinking about flappy flaps and sucking on chrome. That's the word for a gun. Look it up on Urban Dictionary, bitch. Manny man. Flappy, 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 flappy man. Off the top of the head. Yo, here's the thing about being Matt Lee. It's hard. I work hard and I don't get no reprieve. No reprieve, no leave, no leave of absence. I used to do drugs, but then I got an abscess. An abscess is when you try to shoot up drugs and you miss the vein. It goes into your muscle and stuff. And then there's like a disease that can happen. It's not really a disease. I'm just trying to be rapping, but it's like it goes in, it gives you an infection, and then you got the infection and it's evades detection until you see an abscess start to grow and you're like, oh no, I better get over to the hospital. Yeah. Wow. You know what? I should go on Sway. That guy Sway, he does like the thing. I mean, that was the best. That was the best thing I've ever done. I could keep going, bitch. Man. See you next week, bitch. Such a fuck. In my butt with my nutty nut. What if I did that? On Sway. Alright, bye.
Alright, Vince. You ready to do this?
Yes.
You look great, by the way. You too, Matt. You look great. Thank you, dude. That's so nice of you to say.
You look great. You're always great.
You're a great friend.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.